ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
We've got magnificent weather.
I love the people. Beautiful place.
Everything's good.
Streaming now at abc.net.au/Brisbane.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Ron Saduke is from Pop Fiction Books, and he has a grab bag of goodies as always. Ron, welcome. Lovely to see you.
You too.
You just choose a mic, whichever one you want. Is that one a bit floppy? Go there. You go.
Yeah, I'll go this one. Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah, lovely to see you. And well, I don't know where we're going to start today. Maybe a detective novel set during the last days of the Raj.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it was an odd month for me because I started reading lots of things, but lots of books. I don't know. I just didn't feel the good book buzz, and I'd get to page 50 or 60 and think life's too short. Maybe it was me. Maybe I just wasn't in the mood. So the ones tonight are the things that really that I got through and thought this is fantastic and found my mojo. And
I read some of the reviews for A Necessary Evil, which I think is the first one you want to talk about, and people just wildly raving about it.
Yeah, and it's funny because I liked this book a lot. I mean, I loved it, but it wasn't the one that I'm raving about. I just thought it was a really good, to me, it felt like golden age crime. You know, it's set in the 1920s in India, in Calcutta, and a small province. And it felt like it was written almost at the time. I mean, it was just it felt like a really cracking golden age mystery, you know, but one that moves along at a really good clip. And of course, reading about 20s India now, with the benefit of hindsight, just the history of what was happening between the wars and the movement for British, to get rid of the shackles of colonial rule and moving for independence. And of course, that's what's happening. Our hero has Sam Wyndham has come from Britain after the war, and he's had a pretty rough trot. I mean, he was a policeman, he was in the war, he was badly shell shocked, and then he gets back to Britain, and his wife dies in the influenza epidemic. And so the man's pretty damaged. He's going through a lot of PTSD now, but undiagnosed then. You've just got to keep a stiff upper lip and get on
with
it.
Drug addiction, that's
it. Well, he copes with it. He's fair into the opium.
Yeah.
And he's loving it. And so, you've got the palaces of the princes and these great colonial Victorian edifices and architecture and amazing luxury to him sort of going off to little scuzzy opium dens and sort of just trying to sort of reconcile everything and cope with the pain. But of course, he does progress, and he's a great character because he's flawed. And also, I like the way he's assigned an Indian offsider who's a very smart British educated young Indian guy who's coming up the ranks and is really clever, and their relationship is nice, and the sort of what they're learning from each other about the way it all works is terrific.
Okay, so he's a young Indian policeman, right?
The young Indian policeman is working with Sam Wyndham, our British expat there, and of course, and he's unlucky in love, and there's, some femme fatales thrown in and lots of sort of politics as well as a good murder mystery, but just beautifully done. And really, if you've got any interest in that period of history and what was happening there, the whole move to sort of be independent has been going on for a lot longer than, the late 30s or the 40s, and which is often as it's presented. And it's great stuff.
Really, yeah, nice. Right.
You feel as if you're there. You're walking the streets, you're eating the food. It's terrific.
Yeah, the reviews I read, we're talking about that. It's just leaping off the page.
Yeah.
But
and also, he was discovered in a competition. Yeah. I mean, they one of the publishers and I think a newspaper ran a competition for the best unsolicited, unpublished, crime manuscript thing, and his first one, which was the A Rising Man, was the one that won that, and I really liked that. I thought it was great. But I think this is a more accomplished, more polished piece of work. I mean, he's one of those authors that you feel is really going to build and just, get better and better as time goes by.
Okay, so A Necessary Evil by Abir Mukherjee.
Mukherjee?
All right. Retribution Road, still in crime and mystery territory.
Oh, this is a book. Right. Holy cow. You know, this is one of those books that I had seen on the shelves but paid no attention to whatsoever. The cover looks a little bit Wild Westy. You know, it's got a kind of a man that looks like he could be Buffalo Bill.
It could be the Marlboro Man.
Yeah, or something going on, you know, just the sort of... And it's translated from the French. It's a French author, Antonin Varenne, who's won some awards there, which I will not try and pronounce because we'll highlight how poor my French accent is. And
we've only got another 15 minutes to try and get through them.
It's extraordinary. It's not an easy description because it's not a genre crime novel. It actually feels like it's three novels in one. The first part of the novel is set in Burma in the 1850s, and the East India Company is coming to the end of the East India Company's reign, as it were. And there's a last push and some battles going on and a small group of, you know, misfits, headed up by a sergeant, who's tough and charismatic and has seen a lot, are sent in on a sort of secret mission for the higher ups. But what they don't realise is it's actually kind of to sort of secure a whole bunch of rubies and, you know, enrich already very rich men's fortunes.
Of course.
And it's like reading Joseph Conrad or something. It's extraordinary.
Wow. Really?
And
wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're on a junk in a river in the backwaters of Burma and everything goes hideously wrong and, you know, there's a battle and he and his men are imprisoned and tortured and it's awful. Eventually, he does survive and eventually he makes it back to London. And the second part of the book is all set in London where he's pretty damaged, like our previous hero. And he's working for the East India Company, also has a private militia, there was a whole bunch of, I think, private militias that were sort of precursors to the London police force. And, you know, and he's working for them, and it's a fascinating time in British history too, because it's a lot of the action happens during the Great Stink, which was when there was a drought in London and southern England around the early 1850s, and it got so bad that they had to abandon sitting at the Houses of Parliament, and the windows were all boarded up. I mean, it was
I've never heard of the Great Stink before. It's
legendary. Well, in fact, it was the whole reason that modern sewage systems, as we know them, came along.
Everything was backed up.
Everything. It was just this horrible open sewer, the Thames. There was no water. And the conditions, as he describes them, are just extraordinary. And they tally with everything that you've heard. But his beautiful, he writes so well. And the translator has done such a fantastic job of translating. So how much of
from the French,
there's
yeah.
his style and then there's the translator's style. And they work very well together. And the way he describes what's going on during this kind of amazing period, which Bazalgette was called in and created the sewers and, you know, this huge drainage system and the whole move to sort of modern hygiene was kind of, it grew in a big portion out of this. I mean, and there was, you know, outbreaks of cholera going on and all sorts of stuff happening.
Right.
In the midst of this, our hero is called to where a corpse has been discovered in the sewers. And he realizes when he sees the corpse, because of the markings, the way it's been tortured, that it has to have been one of the 10 people that came back from the ill-fated expedition to Burma.
Right.
And, you know, the word survive has been scrawled in the victim's blood up on the bricks in the sewer. And he knows he has to find the culprit because otherwise it's probably going to get pinned on him. So it begins this huge journey.
This is like the second novel, if you like.
Yeah, and then he tracks down, you know, he has to go through what's happened to the other survivors and eventually kind of works out that, you know, the possible murderer is now headed to America. So then the third part of the novel comes and he goes to America.
This is epic.
It really is. It's extraordinary. And he ends up in, first port of call is New York, and he ends up in the middle of a big labor strike of like women seamstresses going on strike and, you know, there's violence and mayhem. And then he's out in the Midwest and to the Wild West and ends up tracking and the murders are continuing and he's, but of course there's no communication. It's all a little bit by chance that you're finding all this stuff and he's gradually working out who he thinks it's going to be and you're getting into this thing and it just builds towards this climax and he's not a very appealing character to begin with. He has charisma, but he's really, by the end of it, you just think this man is amazing. But to me, I've never read a book that uses that part of history and treats it like noir fiction. It's like he turns, you know, going out to the Wild West is a sort of a noir thriller. The same with Burma and with Lala. It's a tour de force. It's extraordinary. Wow. I
want to read this book.
I was blown away. I think if you've got if you want to give an intelligent male reader at Christmas time a book, then try and obtain a copy of this. I mean, I think it's going to be one of those awkward things where it's going to come out in paperback early next year, so it might be a little bit thin on the ground. So get a copy while you can. It's called Retribution Road, and it's a cracker.
Right.
Loved that book. All of his other books.
Okay. So can Jessica Townsend's fantasy novel Nevermore compare?
Well, look, here's something that, you know.
Just get pale like a parrot.
Well, Trevor, did you read the Harry Potter books?
Yes, I did.
And?
Yeah, I love them. They're great.
Okay. Did you read Roald Dahl?
Yes.
At times?
Yes.
And have you read the Narnia books?
No, I haven't read the Narnia books.
Okay, right. Well, so, I mean, anyone that's read those kind of classics of fantasy fiction, and they're young adult fantasy fiction, but with, you know, this is the joy of children's books and young adult books, that if they're beautifully done, adults get as much out of them, you know.
And
I mean, you can
timeless,
plug into them. They are timeless, and you and also ageless. I mean, you know, it might be aimed at young readers, but it's something that an adult, if it's done well, can really get into and just love and adore. And I think that was a big part of the Harry Potter appeal. You know, they sort of started it with this adolescent boy and aged it, and parents would be giving it to kids who were around the same age or a little younger, and then the characters aged, and so did the children.
Well, of course,
and the parents got into it, and it was
In our case, and with a lot of parents, you read it to your kids. So,
absolutely.
You know, so of course you're already reading it, and then you want to find out. You know, you want to know what's happening.
And of course,
in the next
one of the best things about the Potter phenomenon was that once people had finished that, there was a thirst for more that was a little bit similar, that kind of like, well, that was great, but what else is there out there that's fantastical and
magical,
and, you know, magical and will, you know, inspire and you know, give a child a sense of wonder or an adult a sense of wonder. So, and it meant that a lot of authors were kind of rediscovered. Like, one of my favorites was an English author, Diana Wynne Jones, who'd been, you know, around for a really long time, but, you know, the franchise had kind of died down and that sort of thing. And I think because the Potter books were doing so well, and Harper just reissued them with great jackets and they took off, and there were various other authors that really got a boost, and people were reading them as well. So, but of course, there's always a lot of hype because, you know, every publisher is saying, hey, this is going to be the next Harry Potter.
Yeah,
like, really?
Yeah.
Come on.
Not another one. I
exactly.
Know.
And this is one of those. So, well, no, that's what the publisher's hype was.
Oh,
and
right,
so
yeah.
We were all a bit cynical, a little bit jaded.
Yeah,
and and the sales representative from the publisher was really excited about it and was like, oh, you know. And one of the reasons was that Jessica Townsend is one of our own. She's a Queenslander.
Okay.
You know, she left school. She went to Kiwanis Waters High, apparently, and left school and worked at Australia Zoo, the Irwin thing, for many years, you know, sort of selling souvenirs and doing stuff there, and had always wanted to travel and do things, and ended up going to London and wrote, and, you know, took nearly 10 years to write this book. And I think believe she's since come back to Australia and applied, you know, to get the book through an agent, and the agent did, and then it hit Frankfurt Book Fair, and it was this huge international publishing auction where everyone went nuts over it and were bidding for it. Yeah, I mean, the people, the editors at the publishing houses and the publishers read it and were like, this is great. Within a very few pages, you're immersed into this really well-constructed, fantastic universe that's, to my mind, there's something wonderfully surreal about it, but it's very much like a Roald Dahl, like James and the Giant Peach or something, like, you know, Wonka. It's hard to describe, and very clever and funny, and the things she does with stuff that we know and everyday objects and things, she just has a great way of looking at them. But of course, you know, you've got to care about the characters, and you do. This kind of fairly, you know, this poor little girl, you know, she's a cursed child. And because she's a cursed child, everything around her goes wrong, you know, and then people claim that, you know, when, you know, they lose a spelling bee and it was because she'd happened to go pass at the time, or, you know, something, when anything goes wrong, someone breaks a hip, they blame, you know. So basically her parents spent a lot of time paying out compensation, and she spends a lot of time writing apology notes.
She's been ostracized.
She's been cursed, sort of.
Right.
And the sad, the worst thing about being a cursed child in this universe is that on your 11th birthday, on Eventide, you, at midnight on that, you know, you're dead. So they're kind of knowing that she's going to have her demise fairly shortly. But of course, in her case, it doesn't happen. And a quite fantastic stranger turns up at the 11th hour and says, no, 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 and takes her away to Nevermore, this fantastical city where she's up on a big competition to sort of with hundreds of other would-be children who've got magical qualities and things. You know, it's there's a so many tasks that she has to do, and you know, there's big talking cats and incredible hotel that she lives in where the bedroom adjusts itself to be your ideal bedroom. So yeah, every time you come in, something's changed to just accommodate your taste and your needs a little bit more. And
yeah,
she's fantastic.
But when you get into this genre, the problem is always, does it sound too much like someone else, or is it too similar to, you know?
Look, I mean, it's got elements, and in an interview I read with her, she's the sum total of everything she's ever read.
Mm.
And so I can see little bits of things peeking through. I've you know, definitely got a little sense of Narnia and a sense of Roald Dahl and a sense of Potter and a sense of all the books that she's loved, and most of those I've loved as well.
Yeah.
But it's a whole new way of looking at it. She's very, like, she's got a great imagination, really clever, and it ticks all the boxes. I mean, the story moves along at a cracking pace.
Yeah.
And it's so beautifully described without being over described that, you know, in your mind's eye, you're seeing this extraordinary scene. And of course it's very filmic, and apparently it's been optioned by 20th Century Fox before the book was even published to make it, you know, and it will make a blockbuster film. It'll be fantastic. Everything the plot should do, it does.
Without being predictable.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, and you know, and the pacing is great. The characters, the sense of wonder. I can't, you know, for once the hype is right. And of course, one of my colleagues was even more cynical about it than I was. And as she was leaving, I said, right, take a copy of the book, start reading, see what you think. You know, like, come on, put your money where your mouth is. You think it's going to suck. And of course, you know, about 20 or 30 minutes later, I got a text basically along the lines of, oh, I'm nearly at my station, but I don't want to stop reading. It's quite good. And then for the rest of the evening, I'd get a kind of text every hour or so sort of saying, oh, it's fantastic. You know, by the end of it, it was like, oh, when will there be more? I want more. So good.
They might be the people pinging you right now saying,
possibly,
oh, I love
is
that book. It's
possibly
fantastic,
is
Ron.
Or possibly saying, don't forget to mention this, don't forget to mention that. But you know, there's almost too much to mention. It's got some beautiful scenes in it.
Wow.
It's really clever.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in awe of this young woman's talent and her ability. I mean, I think she's 30, and she's one of those really young looking 30s that you just go, oh gosh, she's so young and so clever. Second one's apparently nearly written, and I think three have been optioned, and she says she's got the plots for about nine in her head. I gather that she was actually writing about something else to begin with. It was the aunt. This character was actually the aunt of a different character, but then she thought, gee, the aunt's fascinating. Why don't we go back and look at how she became who she was?
All right.
So I think she's got a whole
10 years in the making, but obviously, you know, she has arrested development, and she's going to be the eternal child.
It's really witty. It's very funny.
Wow.
I mean, because she was writing it really with an eye to making her sister laugh, who was one of her readers. And so she'd think, oh, Sally will love that, you know, whatever. And you know,
it's a great story in itself behind the book. Jessica Townsend, Queensland author. The book is called Nevermore. So one for kids that
adults should love
too. Definitely love.
If they liked Potter, get this for your children at Christmas. It will be a favourite.
All right. And you found something a little bit quirky to wrap up proceedings.
Yeah.
This evening.
Christopher Fowler's The Book of Forgotten Authors.
Some of which might have been those fantasy authors you were referring to earlier who suddenly come back into vogue.
Yeah.
So, what's that line in the inscription in the book? Absence doesn't make the heart grow fonder. It makes people think you're dead.
Yes.
You've got to love that book already.
Under the heading, why are good authors forgotten? and Fowler, who is a terrific writer himself and a very prolific writer, and has a sort of a really quirky kind of paranormal crime series that we do really well with. But he's been a huge fanboy. He just loves reading, always has ever since he was a kid. And I've often thought, you know, what, you know, you remember a time when something was the super duper bestseller and you couldn't move for, you know, I seem to remember someone saying once they were coming into work one morning and they looked up and just about every single person in the carriage had a Dan Brown paperback. They were when it was the big, big thing.
You know, I didn't enjoy those books at all. I thought they were really poorly written.
Well, it's funny because that person then said to me, like, she said, but then as time went on, I'd sort of was moving on to other books and I'd keep looking and it was like the same people reading exactly the same book day after day, week after week, month after month. She thought, you don't read a lot, do you? Anyway, that's probably a little bit nutty. Oh, no. However, but there have been some terrific authors over the years, sure, and authors that sold a lot of books that, you know, now are completely forgotten. And it's a look at, you know, why that happens, but also like putting in a shout for some authors that were really seriously very good and who have been now forgotten. So he writes, he looks at 99 authors and he gives them little groupings. You know, there's some, you know, forgotten rivals of Holmes, Bond and Miss Marple, you know, forgotten queens of suspense, you know, sort of forgotten Disney connection book, people that, you know, had a big thing. And these were in their day, they were huge names. And it's well worth revisiting them. Some of them, a lot of them, are out of print. You won't be able to get them easily.
Yeah.
But they might be available in secondhand bookshops. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're collectible things. And that's a lot easier now because you can get online and order from all over the place. And he also does one at the end, a chapter called The Justly Forgotten Authors, which are people that he thinks that you know, probably they're better off left forgotten. And I mean, but he argues the case. And I mean, and in fact, you know, after you read them, there's a couple of them, you think, but you don't seem to be arguing that they really should be forgotten. You know, you seem to actually be very fond of them anyway. But it's funny because
it's his own personal indulgence, his guilty pleasure.
Yeah, it is. Well, he's got a chapter on Dennis Wheatley, who was like the British. He says in between the 30s and the 50s, when he was at his peak, Wheatley, who was this kind of bizarre character and his sort of self-styled Satanist and sort of thing, he sold something like 50 million copies.
Ooh.
And now there's not a single one in print. So, but they do, you know, how can they not turn up secondhand? Yes. Extraordinary stuff there, you know. But, you know, it is. It's just, and it's a book to dip into. And there's a couple of things I'd forgotten about. There's some, you know, some of my favorite, you know, Arthur Upfield's, there's a thing called the Forgotten World Authors. And these were people that were hugely popular all over the world. And people like Arthur Upfield, he wasn't just popular in Australia. He was far more popular in places like America and Germany. Yeah. You know, and there's a guy called Tom Tyron who was a sort of an actor who then became a sort of a novelist and screenwriter. He did The Dark Secret of Harvest Home and various other things. And, you know, he was hugely popular. I mean, it was a big event. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch of people in there that you just think, wow. I mean, there was one, there was an author called Leslie Blanche, and I sort of thought, oh, I haven't thought about her in years. Yes, and probably about 30 years ago, I read a book called The Wilder Shores of Love, which was about, it was a non-fiction book about four extraordinary Victorian women who just did, they went for it. They lived unconventionally. They flouted the mores of their time and went off and had these amazing lives. And, you know, and I'd completely forgotten about it. Now I want to go back and reread that. You know, so there's, and, you know, T. Lobsang Rampa.
Yeah,
does anyone remember him? Again,
my dad had some of his books.
Millions. They sold so many. And, of course, he turns out he was just some guy from the British home counties pretending to be Tibetan, apparently. But... but at the time, they were a really big thing.
So, yeah,
I mean,
they were.
Huge, no, I mean, I think that's probably the best Christmas stocking stuffer I've seen this season, and I can't get enough of it. I got it next to my bed, and I'll just read a chapter or two every night and think, wow.
Great fun. You know? So much to explore. The Book of Forgotten Authors, Christopher Fowler, Ron Sadduk, as always, you've come through in such a fabulous way.
Thank you.
Streaming now at abc.net.au/Brisbane. This is ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.